Nashville, July 14. My black swivel chair at the Nashville Citizen Reporter is ancient. The line, "What has he done for us lately?" is a recent addition to it, chalked across the back in three bold lines. Something about the chair makes me think of black leather jackets. I sit under a gold, four-sided clock hanging at the center of a huge 200-foot by 150-foot city room. I doubt that anything other than the people inside the room has changed since the 1930s. At noon, only one other typewriter was going in the whole place. Most of the writers and editors would come in around 1 or 1:30. At 1 exactly, I called my editor, Lewis Roston, to let him know I was at my desk if he wanted to touch and see me. Moments later, the diminutive Mississippian appeared, unsmiling, in front of my desk. Lewis reminds me of Truman Capote, either having gone straight or never having gone at all. He was wearing striped suspenders, a polka-dot bow tie, Harry Truman eyeglasses.
"A beard," he drawled thickly. "That's exactly what you didn't need."
He slipped away back in the direction of his own office. "Come," he called. I went down to his office, and he was already on the phone to our executive editor, Moses Reed. Roston's office is cluttered with old newspapers and assorted antebellum memorabilia. It looks like the parlor of a Margaret Mitchell devotee. I sat down, noticing a new or at least uncovered sign over his desk. "What the good Lord lets happen, I'm not afraid to print in my paper, Mr. Charles A. Davis." That sign, notwithstanding Mr. Davis, was vintage Lewis Roston.
"Oakes is back," he was saying over the phone.
He turned to catch me perusing a 1921 Citizen.
"Moses wants to know what you've turned up."
"A lot of things," I smiled.
"A lot of things," he told Reed. "Yeah, don't I know it," he added.
I winced. Lewis hung up the phone and banged out a sentence on his old battered Royal.
"The quick brown fox, you and me and Reed, the Honorable Francis Marion Parker, Arnold, Michael Cuda, up on 7 in 20 minutes, he said. "Big strategy session. What have you got? Anything new?"
I took out the photograph of Thomas Berryman. "I have this." Lewis held the picture about 3 inches under his nose and eyeglass.
Mr. Thomas Berryman, I presume."
I nodded and stayed with my 1921 paper.
"I'd like to get some copies of this. What I'd like to do is run it around to all the hotels later. Look at these, will you?"
He handed me a telephone toll call check, also some kind of credit card check through American Express. The credit card slip showed that Thomas J. Berryman had charged 7 flights on Amex number 04122016011000AX since January 1. His flights had been to Port Antonio, Jamaica, Port-au-Prince, Amarillo, Texas, Caneel Bay, and London. None of the flights were to anywhere near Nashville. "Fuck," I muttered. The phone check showed one call made to the Walter Scott Hotel in Nashville on June 9th. "This is pretty interesting. He called here, at least." Roston didn't comment. He was collecting paperwork for the big meeting.
"From the looks of that credit card thing, the man lives pretty damn well," he finally spoke. "What do people up there think he does?"
"Some people seem to think he works as a lawyer. Not too many people know him." Roston put the photograph up to his face again.
"I suppose he could be a lawyer, though."
"No, Lewis. He's a killer." Roston rocked back and forth in his own swivel chair, smiling, puffing on his pipe.
"Now this," he said like some old South storyteller, "is what we used to call a barn burner."
"Barn burners for basketball," I grinned. "You never went to a basketball game in your life."
"No," Roston smiled wider, "but I heard a lot about them."
He stood up, and we started our walk to the executive editor's office. Calmly puffing his pipe, picking motes and strings off his white shirt, Lewis reminded me to try to be politic.